welcome to a bonus episode of Mindful Minds. For those of you who have not listened to the episode that was released at the exact same time as this one, episode 79 with Aaron of Reap, I would really suggest going back and listening to that. For one, it's a great episode. For two, the first like 17 minutes of that episode are me explaining some pretty pivotal changes that are going to be coming to Mindful Minds. They are not the changes that I have teased previously. It has changed again. And long story short, I will be taking an indefinite break after the month of January. So if you want to hear more about that and what it means for everything and why I'm doing it, go listen to the beginning of that episode and then stay for the rest of it because it's a fucking great episode. But this is not the time to talk about all of that, guys. We have something else planned and we'll get into that. But first, I just want to take a second to plug the other project that I've been working on that will continue even past January. And I'm not going to promise that it'll be there for the rest of our lives, but like I do want it to continue. And that is, drum roll, we'll be releasing a merch collection at the end of January. So keep your eyes peeled for that. It is religious trauma themed. I fucking love it. It's so fun. I'm so proud of it. I hope you guys love it. It's cheap. It's affordable. It's fun. I hope you like it because I've just been sitting on it for the past 6 months and I think it's so fun. But now for the main event. Now for why you guys all came. Let's talk about I'm Not Ashamed and the shit show that it is. I watched it today. I wanted it to be fresh in the brain. It is so much worse than I could have ever remembered. My partner watched it with me. He could barely stand it. He had to literally like get up and leave the room a few times because he could not handle how incredibly cringy and annoying and inaccurate it was. So buckle up, bitches, because this one is rough. I'm going to start out with just trigger warning because if you don't know what the movie is about, it is about the Columbine shooting in 1999. So there are obviously going to be some talks about school shootings. And gun violence. And then there's also some content regarding depression, drug and alcohol use. There's a little bit of like slut shaming and kind of some like insinuation of assault. There's some suicidal ideations. All of this I'm not going to go super deep into because I'm just trying to talk about how fucking crazy this movie is. And there's a little bit of ableism in it. In the actual movie, they use the R slur, which is unfortunate. And there's a lot more ableism in the actual movie. But in this episode, we'll just talk a little bit about that because it was just surprising to me. So with all that being said, we're gonna dive in. where do I start? So this all kind of stemmed from, I did a TikTok video a few months ago because Emily Ann did a video about Columbine. And I was sitting next to my partner and I was like, I don't even remember what the video was. Go follow Emily Ann because she's great. But I was literally like sitting on my couch. I looked over at my partner and I said, wait a second. Was Columbine not targeted against Christians? And my partner goes, no. Where did you get that idea? And I was shocked, truly shocked. And I did some research, looked into it, and I then posted about it on my TikTok and found out that so many of you guys had similar teachings of learning about like Columbine and these myths and all of this bullshit that like never fucking happened. And I did some research into it, and it definitely stemmed from like a few specific sources. And the first thing that came to my mind was this movie because I watched it. It came out, let me double check on this. I think it came out in 2018, 2017, but it is basically 2016. I was very close. It is a PureFlix film, which everyone, boo, PureFlix, boo. They're the ones who did God's Not Dead and a few other horrific movies in the name of Jesus. Which, by the way, on that note, we will be covering Fireproof very soon here, the movie Fireproof, because that was my favorite Christian movie as a kid, and I want to rewatch it and see how batshit crazy it is now that I'm an adult. But the Wikipedia description of I'm Not Ashamed is it is a 2016 American biographical drama film, and it's based on the journals of Rachel Scott, the first victim of the 1999 Columbine High School massacre in Columbine, Colorado. So
it follows the story of Rachel Joy Scott, and she comes from a Christian family. If you see in the movie, she like kind of grew up Christian and then has some shit happen in her life. Her dad leaves. Her parents get divorced. She falls in with a quote unquote the wrong crowd, which by the way is just high schoolers with a bottle of vodka. That is the wrong crowd. And they flip back and forth a lot of her being like a Christian and then like, oh, she drank. And like then she's a Christian again. And then like, oh, she smoked. There's that one point in the movie she literally like writes in her journal, like, God, help me not to drink at this party, which makes me sad because I think that these are based off of her actual journal entries. And so it makes me sad that she had like so much pressure on herself. She talks about like being really anxious about like dating a guy who's not a Christian. And then there's also this like very, very, very common theme throughout the entire movie, which I'll talk about a little bit more later. But throughout the movie from start to finish, they talk about the fact that she has always had this like darkness. And they talk about it in two ways. They talk about the fact that she's always felt like she's destined for greater and to change the world. And then they also talk about the fact that she's always felt like she has this like dark cloud over her. She mentions multiple times that she feels like she's not going to live very long, or like things are going to end quickly, or there's going to be some big thing that changes everything. They kind of make it sound like it's a premonition or something, or like she had some like Holy Spirit ghost telling her that Columbine was going to happen. The more you watch the movie, Girly is depressed. Like, she's just depressed. Like, it's all based off these journal entries. She's depressed and she's actively battling depression. And it's very obvious through like the journal entries is she's just depressed. She's depressed. She's suicidal. She has some serious serious issues with depression. And you can see that it just like really impacts her life. And I think that instead of just acknowledging that she was depressed and acknowledging the mental health of that and using this as a story to talk about mental health, I think that if you've ever grown up in the church, they don't love to talk about mental health. And so I think they decided to kind of go down the route of, I guess, that she's the fucking prophet and like figured out the Columbine was going to happen. And they never like point blank say that. They just kind of insinuate that she had this like premonition. It's very odd. Anyways, I also forgot to say this is a Universal film, which Adam and I were shocked. We were watching it and Adam goes, holy shit, it's Universal, because we were trying to figure out who produced the movie. So that's shocking. And I did pay $4.99 to rent this movie. So RIP. but yeah, it's based on writings, and they say it's based on writings and firsthand accounts in the first like 30 seconds of the movie. If you've ever done any research into Columbine or Rachel Joy Scott or who's the other girl? Hang on one second. Please hold. There's another girl. I think it's Cassie Bernal. There's another girl who is a very, very, very common kind of topic in the Columbine conversation, because her parents also perpetuated this like targeting against Christians myth. Cassie Bernal. So Cassie Bernal was one of the ones who was kind of martyred, turned into a martyr, and like her family perpetuated this myth that she was shot because she said that she believed in God. There have been firsthand accounts that are directly contradictory to that. We can go more into that later, but I want to just dive into some of the like the craziness of this movie first, and then we'll go into some of the myths and some of the ways that this was super inaccurate historically. So let's just start off on just some of the crazy fucking shit that this movie communicates. So first off, in the first like 2 minutes of the movie, they paint her older sister as like such a villain. Her name's Bethany, because the mom has so many fucking kids and the dad leaves their family. And the mom goes to the older sister and says, like, you know, it's your job to help me take care of the kids. And the sister's basically like, fuck no. And they like make it seem like she did this horrible thing by saying no. There's quite a few of those like little things that kind of show that this movie is very much so written from like a patriarchal lens and from like a purity culture lens. And we'll talk about that more, especially the purity culture stuff. And I am literally just going to do this breakdown by going through my notes in chronological order so you guys can go through some of the thoughts that I had while watching this movie. So they show that very soon in the – very early in the movie, they show Rachel as a young girl, and then they flash forward to when she's like 15. And when she's 15, she's doing drugs and alcohol, and they kind of create this like pipeline of like divorce – leads to drug and alcohol use. So that's kind of like the first myth-ish. And then comes the Duck Dynasty crew, which I forgot was in the movie. They have three of the Duck Dynasty girls in this movie, and they are horrible actors. And I mean horrible. They're so bad, and they have no reason to be in the movie. They don't further the plot for any reason. This movie was an hour and 50 minutes long. It could have been 60 minutes and it would have had the exact same impact. It was way too fucking long. We learned so much about like all this back shit, like background shit for no reason. It was too long. And the Duck Dynasty crew had no reason to be involved at all. But Sadie, the most famous Duck Dynasty girl, and then Corey, the mom, and then one other sibling is in it. And she basically goes to her aunt's house, who are the Duck Dynasty people, to like get grounded. And they're like these folks who live on a farm and have kind of like, they kind of dress like the Duggars. And I guess that helped her come back to the ground and stop drinking and stop doing drugs. I don't know. Either way, she goes to their church and they play this like, they blare this Christian song in the background. And there's this like montage of her like thinking about joining the Jesus crew. And right as the song escalates, she like threw her hands up in the air and I got chills. And I hate that I got chills. I feel like it's just hardwired into my body, but I did get chills, unfortunately. But it's iconic. It's an iconic scene, but it's so cringy and so awkward. And I don't remember what song it is, but if you heard it and you went to youth group at any point in the 2000s, you will recognize it immediately. And then they go into her at the school. This is where it starts to actually become like very historically inaccurate, because before that point, this is just like someone's account of a girl's life based on her parents and like her journals. And there's not too much to be argued. It also isn't harmful, in my opinion, if that's not entirely accurate, because it's just her home life. Like, okay, she went to a church and her parents got divorced. Like, none of it is that serious. But then we start seeing the school and we start introducing the other people who were involved in this incredibly historical shooting that was so devastating to the Columbine community. And we start seeing some pretty significant historical inaccuracies, the first of which they show the school shooters being bullied. And they make it a huge point in the movie to like show this big bullying scene where the jocks like oil up the shooters, and this is obviously before they're the shooters, and slide them into the wall and say it's like called like dork bowling or something like that. There is no historical or firsthand accounts of such bullying happening to the shooters. That did not exist. And that's not to say that it didn't happen, but there is no historical evidence that that did happen. So the movie taking that creative liberty to like make it sound like bullying led to school shootings compared to the fact that these were two neo-Nazi individuals who did something horrific is super problematic in my opinion. I am close with a school shooting survivor, and I have heard from her directly that one of the most difficult and harmful myths that can be perpetuated with school shootings is the idea that bullying causes them, because it puts the pressure on the students to prevent school shootings. And I'm not saying that bullying is okay. There are definitely bullies in high schools that do horrific things to people. That's so true. But when you always go to this like bullying narrative in a school shooting, it puts the pressure and the shame and the expectation back on the students to like prevent this, compared to talking about the real problem at hand, which is like, in my opinion, a very serious like gun access issue. But yeah, so that's the first like pretty significant historical inaccuracy. And then They have some very annoying ableist shit in this movie as well. There is an individual who is disabled, and throughout the entire movie, he gets bullied by the jocks. He gets called the R-slur, and then, like, Rachel Joy Scott becomes his friend, and it's very patronizing, and it's very, like, inspiration porn adjacent. And it's just kind of icky to watch. Like, it gave me and Adam the ick. Like, we were watching it, and we're just like, ugh. And then there's this whole other story arc that follows Nathan. Nathan is this houseless kid that Rachel Joy Scott meets at youth group. And this is like 90s youth group. So it's just like them sitting in a circle eating snacks. And she's at youth group and she meets this guy. And he's like kind of like his clothes are kind of dirty. He like looks a little rough. And she follows him when he leaves because he shows up for youth group and then almost immediately leaves. She follows him outside and follows him to a homeless encampment. And I don't remember this from the first time I watched the movie, but I was like shocked. And Adam and I both were like, what is going on? So it's very weird. It's very weird. She follows him. And my notes exactly are, why are Christians so annoying and invasive? Because she follows him and he's like, basically like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, I don't need your help. And she says point blank, I'm not leaving until you tell me something you need. Which, like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck? And then he tries to walk away from her and she calls him rude. And then she immediately starts calling him her big brother. And this is where it gets really weird. She calls him, she says, I always wanted a big brother. And he's like, I'm not your fucking big brother. Like, who are you? He just met her. They don't know each other. She continuously calls him her big brother. And it is like weird, pick me, creepy energy. It's so invasive. It's so pushy. And then later he shows back up to youth group because she promises him food. And she threatens to play in traffic if he doesn't come to youth group. Let's let that sit in. Let's just hear me one more time. She threatens to play in traffic if he doesn't come to youth group. And I think that alone encapsulates the absolute unhinged nature of evangelicalism. So their relationship is very weird. I don't know if they're supposed to be romantically involved. She like has a crush on this other guy and he is like turned off by her Christianity for some reason. And I don't know. That's like a whole storyline throughout the entire movie. And he's an actor. And so I will warn you, if you watch this movie, you have to sit through a lot of like really bad acting montages because they're both like trying out for the school play. And it is just like such a shit show. Truly. It's such a shit show. They're both like trying to like act well for this school play. And it's just really bad. Like neither of them are good actors. And it's really cringy to watch. And they keep talking about how Rachel Joy Scott is a really good writer. And that's like a point of, it's an important point. I don't know why it's an important point, but they emphasize it so much that she's like a good writer. And I shit you not. Every time they read her writing, it sounds like I wrote it in my journal when I was 7. I'm not like trying to hate on her. It just is shocking to me that they keep showing it as like her fantastic writing. Like at one point, I literally wrote this down because it was so funny to me. She says, "Oh God, give me strength. Help me choose the path we both know is right. That path leads to you." And she's reading it out loud like it's a poem. And her crush goes, "Wow, that's really good." And I spit out my water. Like she just wrote down a prayer. It's not like groundbreaking. And he literally goes, "Wow, that's really good." And then he gives her his fucking puka shell necklace. So if that doesn't give you a little bit of a glimpse into what this movie is, not sure what will. But yeah, so their whole relationship is weird. And then her and the formerly houseless kid, Nathan, is, I don't know if they're supposed to like each other or if he's supposed to be like protective, but they really hold on to that whole big brother thing. And it's very odd and weird. And I looked up the actor that played the big brother and he apparently has been in a ton of Pureflix films. So that's kind of funny. But there's another like purity culture theme throughout the movie with one of her friends. I do not remember her friend's name. That's how irrelevant she was to the story. But she likes to have sex. She likes to have sex. And she has sex with a different guy like quite often. And there's always kind of this like overarching purity culture theme where Rachel keeps telling her like she's worried that something's going to happen to her. And it kind of insinuates that she thinks she's going to get assaulted because she's just having sex, which I think is not dealt with well. Again, a lot of this I think is like very much so they take a lot of creative liberty. And the way that they do this movie is they flip back and forth between Rachel Joy Scott and her kind of like very basic high school problems. Because it really is like the story of her life more than it is the story of Columbine. They only spend about 15 minutes at the end of the movie on Columbine. So it is a lot of just like her and her very religious background and very cringy quotes and youth group shots. It's not really about Columbine as much as it is just about her. And they focus a lot on the bullying, like a lot. And they do focus on how the shooters were neo-Nazis. Like, they do talk about that. They talk about the fact that it was, like, Hitler's birthday and that they had an obsession with Hitler. And they show this one scene about a class project where they are asked what could be done to make the world better. And the shooters have this gruesome video that they present. And I have no idea if that is historically accurate. I wasn't able to find any information on that. But I would be really interested to find out if it isn't. Because if it is... Or if it isn't, they took a lot of creative liberty with that shot specifically, and that scene in the movie. But I couldn't find anything about it. But they do show the shooters as kind of outcasts and like losers, and they show they get bullied. They show that they like throughout the movie they show that the shooters have a problem with Christians, with jocks, and with the disabled kids. And that's like it's throughout the entire movie that they have like issues with the jocks, the disabled kids, and the Christians. They keep like making fun of Rachel Joy Scott. They keep calling all the disabled kids the R-slur. They keep talking about how the jocks are like the worst people in the world. There's this like very, very, very repetitive theme throughout the entire movie that they have an issue with these three groups of people. So, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but that is a very consistent theme. And then they go back into Rachel Joy Scott's depression, which they kind of just act like is like her being far away from God. They keep talking about how she feels numb and she feels like numb and away from God. And she wishes she could be close to God and how she has this like feeling that she's going to die soon or that she won't live long and that she's going to make an impact on the world, all of these things. And these are all, I believe, based off her journal entries. And again, it just seems like she's depressed. And they even have her depressive thoughts spoken out loud. And they do it in a like demonic voice. And even on the subtitles, it says like demonic voice and then what it's saying. And it says like, I am worthless, like I am useless, like all these things that her like depression is saying to her. But they make it seem like it's like a demonic force and not like it's just depression, which is incredibly common. I know that when I was really depressed, I had so many thoughts of like, I don't think I'm going to live very long, like having anxieties about that because I had so many suicidal ideations. And they show all of this in a scene where she's like about to kill herself. And so that is all, I think just I think they tried to make it spiritual and it's really just depression, which was interesting. And then once she kind of commits her whole life to Christ, she talks about how she's bullied for liking Jesus. And my partner makes the really good point of like, he was like, I wonder if she was bullied for liking Jesus or if she was bullied for like praying over people randomly and being like super pushy and invasive. Because again, if we go back to earlier in the movie where she followed a houseless kid for like 30 minutes and forced him to let him help her, or she would throw herself into traffic. Like, I don't know. Maybe you're being bullied for that because that is like abnormal behavior and it is not really okay to be doing. And then there's a fun little Jackie Velasquez cameo for all of you who used to listen to wonderful Christian music. She's like the art teacher. Not the art teacher. She's like the, I don't actually know what fucking class they were in. Theater? I think she's the theater teacher. I didn't realize it was her until I looked this movie up on IMDb. And then I was like, oh my God, no way. And then they go into the shooting. Ugh. So first of all, this movie is rated PG-13. I think it is PureFlix's like only PG-13 movie. They don't really do movies that aren't like PG or G. It is graphic as shit. So hardcore trigger warning if you do not like violence, if you are triggered by gun violence, it is icky. I remember when I watched it when I was like 17, I was shocked at how much graphic violence they showed. And now let's get into the inaccuracies, because basically this movie's cheesy as fuck. It's cheesy. It's awkward. It is so full of like Christian propaganda. The acting is fucking horrible. It has a shitty plot line. It could have been 60 minutes. It is way too drawn out. I think they want Rachel Joy Scott's character to come off as this like martyr hero. She comes off as like pushy and doesn't take no for an answer and doesn't have good boundaries and is super fucking judgmental. And I don't think that's how they wanted her to come off, but it is how she comes off. That's not me saying that's how she is as a like was as a person. That's not what I'm saying. But she comes off that way, so it's kind of like awkward to like watch. And then I wanted to like go over some of the ways that I think it really perpetuates some awful, awful, awful myths. So there are quite a few articles about this, and quite a few like breakdowns of why this was problematic and harmful. So one of those myths that the movie does back up is that Harris and Klebold, which are the shooters, their last names, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, that they were a part of this like trench coat mafia group at their school. And there were some kids that reported that initially. And I guess the research has been that that's actually incorrect. And the reason why that's important is because people reported that they were members of a small clique of outcasts and that they were like gothic and were into like cults. They definitely were neo-Nazis and had some association with Hitler, because there a lot of the stuff that they did was based off of like Hitler's ideology. But it seems like that has been proven incorrect, like the whole trench coat mafia thing. And in the movie, they portray them that way. They portray them as someone like kids who were bullied, kids that were outcasts and loners, and that they were not cool. And I'm getting the article I'm using to back this up is the Washington Post had an article that came out for the 20-year anniversary. And this has been backed up by so many articles because they've done so much more research into this. Because if you think about it, 1999, this was the biggest school shooting that had ever happened. And therefore, a lot of the reporting initially in the first 24 to 48 hours was not correct, but it was reported. And so it stuck in people's minds as the truth of what happened. So, like that they even say in this article that the Washington Post described them as an isolated pair and the Denver Post said loners. And that when they looked through the shooters' lives, that wasn't accurate. They both had a lot of friends. They went to prom. Like they were not talked about as loners, but the school, the reporting shows that. And the movie, which comes out in 2016, so it's 17 years after the shooting, there's definitely been research that had been done to, you know, dispel these rumors and these myths. Yet the movie backs up all of those myths and perpetuates these like really harmful stereotypes that make it seem like school shootings are just people getting revenge, which is not accurate a lot of the time. So they talk again in the Washington Post that this attack was not revenge for being bullied, that they actually appeared to target peers who had poked fun at them in the past. Like that was something that people had said, that it was like they targeted people or they targeted people for old taunts and prejudice. But if you look at the actual like records, and there's actually a literal photo from one of their diary entries, it says kill mankind. So this was not premeditated in terms of they did not decide who they were going to shoot. If you do more research into it, it was actually a failed bombing. So they show that a little bit in the movie, that there was supposed to be a bomb that goes off and then it didn't. And they make it seem like they, throughout the entire movie, they show that they don't like the jocks, they don't like the disabled people, and they don't like the Christians. And when the bomb doesn't go off, they grab guns and they're going to go into the school. And when they kill Rachel Joy Scott in the movie, they show that they asked her, or do you still believe in God? And she says, you know I do. And he says, so then go be with him, and then kills her. And that is one of the things I remembered from the movie, is this idea that like they walked around and asked people if they believed in God and then killed them, which is has never been accurate. It has no historical accuracy. There are no firsthand accounts of that. There's no like evidence that that happened. And they basically, the bomb failed and they just went in to shoot as many people as they could. Like there was no idea. There's a chance that there was some aspect of revenge, but it wasn't like the reason. They just wanted to eliminate anyone possible. And this article in the Washington Post says, Harris and Klebold did not kill any of the students who had teased them. School shooters rarely do. The two said that they even knew some of their friends might die in the attack. And then someone says, getting it right was very difficult in those early hours and first days. And I think all of us who covered the story regret the mistakes that that were made, said Tom Kenworthy, the Post reporter on the scene that day. So even the reporters know that they made a mistake, including like the death toll. It was initially said it was 25. That was not accurate. So it was a lot of things that went wrong, in terms of how it was reported. And that did play into like the misinformation that was spread in the movie. But again, it was 17 years later, so they could have fact checked it and they chose not to, because I think it played into the narrative they were trying to tell, which is that Rachel Joy Scott was a martyr. So now I'm going to switch to an article by Vox Media, which is actually the article that I found when I initially saw that TikTok and started like doing my own research. So in the movie, they show that it was targeted against Rachel Joy Scott because, they show at one point in the movie the shooters confront her in a hallway or in a stairwell and like bully her and threaten her, which there's no record that that ever happened. Like there's so much creative liberty taken in this movie that just leads to a lot of misinformation and Christian propaganda. So in this Vox Media article, they say, if you were a Christian in 1999, the word Columbine doesn't just make you feel suddenly threatened in places you thought were protected. It's synonymous with both a cottage industry that sprang up around the shooting, a raft of commercial products that retold its stories, sometimes with dubious connections to the facts, and an ethos of martyrdom that seems in retrospect to have summed up what it was like to be a youth group kid at the turn of the last century. So they talk about Cassie Bernal in this article, and she was 17, and that basically she's the one of the main points of where this myth started. That as the story was first told, this article says, Harris asked Bernal if she believed in God moments before he killed her, and she said yes. They talk about how that inspired Michael W. Smith's song, This Is Your Time, which became a title track for his Grammy-nominated album. He also co-wrote a book about it, the Flyleaf song called Cassie also came out. Her mom wrote a book called She Said Yes, The Unlikely Martyrdom of Cassie Bernal. There was a lot around her. So then they go into Rachel Joy Scott, that another myth sprung up about her, that she was basically asked if she believed in God before they killed her, and she said yes. That her mom had a whole bunch of information about the fact that they mocked her and made fun of her because of her Christian values. Whereas there is an expert on the Columbine shooting named Dave Cullen, which if you look up any of these articles, he is one of the main people that like has done so many analysis on like serial killers and all these things and school shooters, and that he has disputed the idea that they target anyone. And that is backed up by like every single expert who has looked at this case. And then her mom published her journals, and that was like a big stepping point to create all of this. So then in this article, they talk about what actually happened at Columbine. And this has been, again, backed up by the experts and the reporters and a whole bunch of different stuff that people did a lot of research into this. And in this article, they talk about the fact that they were not a part of this trench coat mafia, like I mentioned earlier. They also talk about the fact that Bernal, Cassie Bernal's story was falsely reported. And in this article, they say, quote, "It was likely another girl entirely, Val Schnur, who told Klebold, not Harris, that she believed in God before he shot her in the library, but she survived. Bernal was also in the library, though further from Klebold, and Harris did find her. But eyewitnesses state that he found her, said peekaboo, and then killed her. And they did not interact in any way or another." And the really interesting point about this is apparently Rachel Joy Scott's brother is the recorded eyewitness who saw Cassie Bernal, you know, who claims that he saw Cassie Bernal say that she believed in God before she was killed. Which is really interesting because he's the one who apparently saw that. And it's interesting that he's also tied to Rachel Joy Scott. So her mom, Bernal's mom, then ended up really perpetuating this whole thing. And then when Valerie Schnur, who lived, told her story at youth rallies, it was seen as suspicious and perhaps like a copycat. And Bernal's story had completely overshadowed her own, despite the fact that it seems like Val Schnur was the actual one who said what they thought Cassie said. And again, this is all based off of like really loose eyewitness accounts in a very traumatic environment. So yeah, it's a little bit rough. And as I said earlier, there's never any eyewitness account or record that Rachel Joy Scott said anything of the sort. There's kind of a suspicion that after the Cassie Bernal myth came out, Rachel Joy Scott's mom hopped on that myth as well. And then all of a sudden, there's now this myth that like two of the girls were killed because they loved God. And then that kind of, you know, snowballed. And now we've got this whole myth. And this is my favorite part of this article. So they explain that this created this martyr fantasy for Christian teenagers. So I'm going to read this whole chunk of this article because I think it's really well done. In the months that followed Columbine, many teenagers professed a Christ-sanctified death wish. A teenager named Tina Leonard told a Southern Baptist news service that God has laid it on my heart, I'm going to be martyred. When I told one of my friends, he said, "That's awesome. I wish it could happen to me." That might sound horrifying, but for many Christian teenagers in the late 1990s and early 2000s, it made a strange kind of sense. If you were a Christian teenager during the period of time following the era of grunge and flannel dropout Gen Xers, following your faith was preached to you as a radical act. Extreme and radical and fully sold out were common terms in Sunday school curriculums, at youth rallies, and in teen-focused devotionals and study Bibles. Teens were supposed to be, quote, sold out for Jesus, end quote. Anything less and you were a bad Christian. Those who guided Christian culture in the 90s were on the hunt for teen-specific ways to inspire young people to stay true to their faith. Conferences, teen-focused books and publications, music that sounded like mainstream music but had Christian lyrics, and t-shirts and other cheap commercial products splashed with sayings like WWJD and FROG abounded. Though youth groups had been around for decades, they exploded as centers of not just spiritual growth but also social life for teenagers across the country. And then they go into the fact that they bring up DC Talk and Jesus Freak, and they bring up the whole martyrdom thing that came out of Jesus Freak, and the stories of those who stood for Jesus, the ultimate Jesus Freaks. There were multiple like Book of Martyrs. They even talk about like the Left Behind series and the movies, and they just kind of go into this whole like martyrdom fantasy. And then they end it with, though Christian books and movies about the Columbine martyrs are still being released today, the martyrdom hysteria isn't as prevalent as a part of Christian culture. DC Talk's Jesus Freak books in 2002 and 2005 focus on revolutionaries. And there's some indication that all of the sold out for Jesus rhetoric of the 1990s and 2000s may have backfired, with the landmark 2015 Pew study finding that the numbers of Christian millennials who consider themselves religiously unaffiliated has grown sharply over the past decade. But the persecution ethos persists. It's fallacious to equate correlation with causation, but to many, it was not surprising to learn that a 2017 study conducted by the Public Religious Research Institute found that white American evangelical Protestants believe Christians face a serious persecution at a higher rate than Muslims. 57% say that Christians face a lot of discrimination in the U.S. today, while just 44% say the same of Muslims. And then they talk about the God's Not Dead series and the martyrdom piece and the I'm Not Ashamed. And it's very interesting because then you go to this. This was written in, let me double check. I think it was 2019. So this is before 2020, which is so interesting because I would love them to do a backup on this article in 2020 because I think that the martyrdom complex is back, baby, and it is back big. We saw it in 2020 with COVID and with Sean Foyt's Hold the Line and whatever the fuck that other thing was called where he did those concert super spreader things and claimed that they were being persecuted because they couldn't sing in churches. There's been so much talk of Christian persecution in the last like 3 years, and I think it is back. I think it is trendy. I think if they were to make this movie this year, it would be so popular among Christians. That is my breakdown, folks. It is a shit show of a movie. It is not historically accurate. I think it's really disrespectful to the survivors, including Rachel Joy Scott. I think it just like fetishizes martyrdom and it's making this like entertainment out of her death. And I think it's really unfortunate. I also think it created this environment and this lie, not the movie specifically, but just this entire myth where, yes, it created an environment where like this is misinformation. And some may say that's not super damaging, but like as someone who grew up in that time period and went to youth group, I was afraid that like that was going to happen to me because there was this like ongoing myth and folklore that Christians could be persecuted against in this way. And I went to a private Christian school, so I was terrified that was going to happen to us. I like practiced saying yes in case anyone ever threatened me and asked me if I believed in Jesus. I was like practicing being brave. I had like escape plans in my school in case a shooter came in, which is part of the horrible reality of school shootings happening and why gun control and gun legislation is so fucking important. But it also shows why this like idea of martyrdom is so dangerous because it's such an adult theme to teach to children. It invokes so much fear and anxiety, and I just think it's super unhealthy. And I think it probably gave a hell of a lot of us OCD because I'm sure a lot of us felt like we had to do certain things to keep ourselves safe. And I think it was super traumatizing for so many kids that grew up during that time period, both because of just the trauma of school shootings while you're a student and while you're an adult and a teacher and whatever. But as a student, it's very scary. But I think even more so with Christians, we felt like we were going to be targeted. And that is truly, it's just a lie. Like it's a lie based off of some really shitty misinformation that was spread in the first 24 to 48 hours after the shooting happened. And there were some misreports and they have corrected them. That information has been made public. And yet it is still just what people have ran with. And I think that this movie released 17 years after, and they had every chance to fact check. And I think that they have just run with this narrative because they can. And I'm not trying to come for Rachel Joy Scott's family. Maybe they truly believe that this is the reality of what happened, but I do think that it's irresponsible to make a film like this. It is also just a cringy, very poorly made film. There's really bad acting. It's horrible editing. It comes off like a human music video, and it's awkward, and it's clunky, and it's weird, and it's ableist, and it's slut-shamey and fat-phobic and so many other things all mixed in. And that's unfortunate. I wouldn't recommend it. But if you watch this movie as a kid and you remember being terrified, or even as a teen, and you remember like being terrified of the idea of this whole martyrdom thing, know that it's not true. Know that it's absolute bullshit. And know that this movie is based off of like just her journal entries, which had nothing to do with the actual day of the shooting because she didn't journal after the shooting. She was not there to do that. So this is all based off of It's based off of bullshit, truly. There weren't eyewitness accounts when she died besides the shooters. So it's not accurate. They took so many creative liberties. It's so inaccurate. And don't spend the $4.99. Okay? Don't do it. Well, thank you for joining us for our first ever Patreon episode. If you liked it, join us for next week.
We will continue to drop episodes for the rest of January. There will be some double drops like this week because I think I have 7 or 8 episodes that I need to drop in January. And obviously there's only 4 Fridays. So there will be quite a few double drops. So keep your eyes out for that. And yeah, thank you guys for listening. Like I said, if you didn't listen to the last episode, please go back and take a listen to that because it's very important in terms of the future of Mindful Minds. And yeah, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you guys so much for listening to this kind of chaotic, weird episode. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. You can follow the podcast at Mindful Minds Pod on Instagram and TikTok and online at mindfulmindspod.com. And check out the Facebook group and keep your eyes peeled for our merch launch. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath, and remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I will chat with you guys next week. Bye.